हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So, Krishna Sandarbha Adhyayana 4 Adhikarna 1, Description of Goloka, the Eternal Abode of Krishna, page 23. Brahma praises Krishna. Chintamani prakarasadmasu kalpa vriksha lakshavitesha surabhir abhipalayan tam Lakshmi sahasra shata sambrama sevyamanam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, who affectionately tends the cows and stables whose walls are made of chintamani. Surrounded by desire trees, he is eagerly served by countless gopis. Brahma Samhita 5.29. Here is the explanation. The most excellent place of the highest form of Bhagavan, Mahatpadam. Mahavaikuntha has the form of a lotus with 1,000 petals and is made of chintamani. And so they'll talk about Mahavaikuntha, but they're only actually getting up to Vasudev in Swetadweep. I mean, it's the other sampradayas when they talk about Mahavaikuntha. So they only get up to there. They don't get to here. Yes.
Because it's not clear. When we studied Paramatma Sandarbha, we discussed, and then sometimes it appears that their main deity is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and sometimes it appears that it's Kiradakshaya Vishnu, sometimes it appears that it's Karindakshaya Vishnu. So. Is it like important to clarify that point?
No. What we're saying here is just what is the reach of their understanding, because the Vaikuntha planets and that, but then they see it, Vaikuntha is expanding unlimitedly, but it comes from that original source. So that's coming from that Maha means Vasudeva, the first quadruple expansion. You know, who sits in the I think east of the right? He's east, no? Yeah, that would work. East there. Sankarshan south. That would be also then. That's Dharma and everything like that. Then Prajumna is in the west. Then that, you know, it's water, taste, and everything like that. Then Aniruddha in the north. You know, which is, you know, the wealth and all that is. You know, Aniruddha, then, you know, results gain. People see, yeah. So he, I would think he'd be sitting in the east. So then, that's as far as they see. And it's probably those also is because, excuse me, you have the aspect of, in the Veda, it'll be talking about these different deities. And so it's just for them, they worship Vishnu. And so in all these different forms. But that's, I think for them, it's just that they're dealing with Vishnu on the transcendental platform like that. How much they make distinction between all the deities. I mean, I think they, Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, Vasudeva, but how much, you know, the Pancharatra mentions them and the Kalyana Gunas. And so Ramanujacharya is quoting from there. So you'll have that feature of you know, being having a nice, you know, broad knowledge of the Lord and all his different features and aspects, but not so. But they don't understand Krishna as the original. Yeah. So yeah. So when I say Mahavaikuntha, they're only getting up to that quadrangle. They're not getting up to the lotus. That's all. So, you know, whether they call that Goloka or this or that, I kind of don't think they may not fully understand it like that. But they just know he has his place. And then from there, then you get Sankarshan Prajumna Aniruddha expanding, you know, the second quadrangle like that. And then from there, then, you know, some say from Vasudeva, then it all expands. Some say from Sankarshan, it doesn't really matter. Because if you're saying Vasudeva, then it's going by his desire. If it's going by Sankarshan, then it's the practical Kriya, you know, Shakti expanding things.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
so technically it's from Sankarshan.
Mechanically it's from Sankarshan. Then that's what we'll explain. But it's by the will of Vasudeva. And because, you know... Krishna's expanded as Sankarsana, since it's his will, since Sankarsana is in the mood of service to Vasudeva, then it's Sankarsana's will that he creates the creation. You know, does that make sense? Vaikuntha expands from him.
Yeah.
So it's by his will, but his will is to please Vasudeva.
Right.
Does that make sense? So
yeah.
He's acting in his independent capacity as the Supreme Lord, but they're still all servants of Vasudeva.
Yeah.
And Vasudeva is a servant of Balaram, who's a servant of Krishna. So ultimately, they're all servants of Krishna.
Yeah.
Like that.
I just remembered from the 10th canto, we know that Balaram killed Pralambasura.
Mm.
I mean, it's right there, the whole pastime. But then, in some other place, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur mentions, isn't it, Prabhu, that actually Krishna killed Pralamba. And it's like, where is this coming from? So he explains the same principle, because it's Krishna's will. So because he desired, that's why Balaram killed him.
Yeah.
It's not, if I desire something and somebody executes my order, then we can say both. He did it, or I did it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's just like you're saying, head of a company. He wants something done, but he has his man perform, you know, okay, so you take care of this. So it got accomplished. So you'll say that the head of the company is doing all these things. But at the same time, you can say specifically, this guy did this work.
Yeah.
You know, so then there's a relationship between the Lord and the Lord. I think it was arranged also in there that you mentioned it, that when they were taking sides for the game, then I think Krishna is the one who arranged for Balaram to be with Pralamba. You know, who should go with who?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I kind of vaguely remember that Krishna said, okay, you know, all the Sudama, you be with this, you know, because he came, oh, welcome, come, play with us, and like that, because he's just a kid who came along. But in the conversation, you don't see them asking where he's from, or this or that, or what his parents, which would be the normal kind of thing. You know, it's just that he's you know, welcomed and all that, and so then I think it worked out that Balaram would. And even if not, Balaram, Krishna understood, so Balaram said, I'll take care of this, is because he knows it's Krishna's desire.
Yeah. Also, the distinction between the Chaturvyuha and the Vaikuntha has no purpose for other sampradayas, because for them it's all dealing with the amshas, then has a natural purpose in the material world with Kalyana Gunas. Two of them each.
Mm-hmm.
So in that, they call Mahavaikuntha, they don't even call Goloka.
Yeah, but I know it's only Mahavaikuntha and Mahanarayana.
So in that, then there are eight places, these four, and then the other four are Rama, Lord Ramachandra, Narsinga, and then two more, Vamana.
Yeah, we just read.
Vamana and Kurma.
Yeah, in Kurma. We just read in Lagavagata.
Mm-hmm. That's why then they're in that position where they're a little bit more powerful.
Yes. Within the Vaigo there almost. So it's always referred like Lord Rama is that Narayana, or Vasudeva they generally call that Mahanarayana. But in Shri's especially, then Lord Ramachandra is directly Mahanarayana himself.
Okay, so they're going up to that. He's the Mahanarayana. Okay. And we'll be seeing in the aspect of the Yuga Avatar. It's interesting that yesterday, the thing on the Yuga Avatar. About that. So that would mean then you have Braj, but then you have to attain Braj. And how do you attain Braj? Just through the direction of the Yuga Avatar, following that Dharma. So then it's then through Navadvip, then you can attain Braj. You know, and then Mathura and Dwarka will be expansions to enhance the aspect of separation and those things like that. And then Ayodhya is then tasting separation in Swakya instead of Parakya.
Yeah.
You know, so then, yeah, it's very interesting how it's all, you know, coming from there. So otherwise you just think, okay, there's this part, which actually, no, there's Vrindavan. And then everything else is connected with Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to clarify, because we just read it in Bhagavad Bhagavatamrita, and I gave that reference, that it wasn't in connection with Paravasta avatars, and then the four deities, Nrisinga, Nrisinga Rama, Kurma and Matsya were mentioned.
Maraha.
And then I actually told the students that it's the same principle like we know Vasudev Sankarshan Pradyumna Aniruddha. So is that correct? Is it what the Vaikuntha people refer to? They position those deities like we position the Vasudev Sankarshan Pradyumna Aniruddha?
I think that they'll have the Vasudev Sankarshan Pradyumna Aniruddha because they're worshippers, they're followers of Pancharatra, so they'd be worshipping. But whether they're putting them in the quadrangle and that's another thing. I kind of think it's just there's that and then he has all this expansion, so somehow or another they're connected. Because for them, I think they'll all be just expansions, so different Vaikuntha planets and all that. So where they are, it's like their own place. It's complete in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still within Goloka, but for them, I'm not sure.
It's another thing is within, again, the third avarana, then there is Dashavatar. Mm-hmm. And they're same again, all the modes repeated. So generally when they position, they all talk about the Dashavatar positions, each, like everybody knows that's the standard.
Okay, that'll be the eight direct ups and downs.
Yeah. That generally...
Who's up?
Krishna.
Krishna's up. Okay. And
down is Kalki.
Kalki.
Oh, so it's always like this. That's how it's pictured.
In some of the temples.
Yeah. Like that. Krishna is just... You don't see it in 3D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're seeing it in 2D. Mm-hmm. But that absolute being around, that's very well established. But what we're saying is that you start and it goes around like this, and then you have Krishna up and Kalki down. You know, because in Kali Yuga people are only this big, so you kind of have to go down to deal with their heads. No?
Because from yesterday class, this class, somehow I got an idea that Vaikuntha starts outside of the
it does.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Outside of the.
That's why I was saying that many don't get to Goloka. It's very rare to attain Goloka because when they enter the spiritual world, they are attracted by the majesty of Vaikuntha. The opulences, the cities, all these things, because everything's there in its greatest capacity. You know, because it becomes prominent. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It just becomes, it's there. You know? So then, they most go to there, so it's rare to attain Goloka.
Yeah.
You know, so whether you get the idea, though, that you might have the Nimbarkas and possibly the Vallabhas, then they're interested in those aspects, but then they'll be attaining Swetadvi, not Braj.
Yeah.
Also, it's stated a little later that only in the upper first time, then the majesty of Goloka Vrindavan, Vrindavan is shown. But here, then only the direct sweetness is shown for devotees who are very sincere. So that the others, the Maya Devi covers, that view so of that covering is the covering of the majesty of Vrindavan. And the Nimbarkas and others, actually their focus, even when they meditate, is more on the majesty of Vrindavan rather than on...
Well, I've heard that someplace that Jiva Goswami calls it Lower Goloka.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you have Braj, you have Gokul, and then you have the rest of the... And so it'll all be part of that scene. So then by this definition here, you have Gokul and you have Swetadvi. So it would be part of that scene.
Yeah.
So there seems to be that within that, there is a feature of Vrindavan that is in majesty. I would say that's different from this other point, is that this one, the majesty is there and it's very much part of the pastimes. But it's Vrindavan pastimes. So like I think it's mentioned, Radha and Krishna there is going for rasa dance. So Radharani goes in a swan airplane with 10 million maidservants and goes to the rasa dance to meet Krishna and that. So you see, it has that mix, you know, of the greatness of Radha and Krishna. You know, it means you, the original, I'd say, you know, Lord and his Shakti. So it's in a very grand way, which is... You know, it's nice for this. They like the Vrindavan pastimes. So I would say those who are, it's about the majesty, but they're attracted by Krishna's pastimes, and these will be there. But I would say on the other side is that saying that it's not discussed or so much brought out, the opulence. It's not majesty, it's the opulence.
Okay.
That's the difference, is that the one, there's majesty in Vrindavan. It's sweetness, but it has that aspect of majesty. So it's still Vrindavan pastimes with majesty. But here it would be its opulence. Because for the Brajvasis, it's just an environment they're in. But because it's exclusive, it's Kevala Bhakti, they're only focused on Krishna. There is no other Rati. So for these other devotees, it's not Kevala. It's focused on the Lord primarily, but they appreciate the trappings. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They appreciate all the things around, so all the opulences and the cities and, you know, the city environment and all these kind of things. So even in Vaikuntha there, you know, so many are attracted to city life.
Yeah.
You know, because it has a, you know, that particular high energy, high, you know, it's all happening and everything like that. You know, so.
And the airplanes don't make sound.
Yeah, the airplanes don't make sound, so.
Oh, but very happy.
Yeah, but you do see that the acharyas do, not in the in some of their works, they're talking about some of the opulences of, like Vrindavan, it has.
Yeah.
Crystal trees means the tree is crystal, and the leaves are emeralds, and the fruits are rubies. You don't hear any of that ever discussed in Vaikuntha. They just say of all the, you know, auspicious trees and everything like that. You don't have that. So, but for the devotees there, these are just, you know, it's just nice stuff. You know, it's not. So for them, the opulence doesn't inspire, like we see is in the rasas there, Rupa Goswami's talking about. The opulence isn't an udipand. And it's not even a, you know, how you say, the alambana, the aspect of just, you know, the definition of Krishna for them, what features of Krishna they see and then which inspires them, right? So those things we see, it's not opulence. It's just Krishna himself, the personality. But it has the greatest opulence. You know, that's what I said. Just a grain of dust from Vrindavan is the source of all the opulence of Vaikuntha. So it's Vrindavan's the most opulent. But because of the Kevala Bhakta, no one's absorbed in that aspect. Here's the explanation. The most excellent place of the highest form of Bhagavan, Mahatpadam, Mahavaikuntha, has the form of a lotus with 1,000 petals and is made of Chintamani. Since there are many abodes, to make this description specific, it is named Gokula. The name indicates a place where there are cows and cowherds. So that's, I guess, the Gokula is just that, has that place. Goloka means the planet of cows. But Gokula will be kind of like the place. And when you say Kula, it's more of the family kind of scene. Or, you know, it has that kind of more, what would you call, not rural, but, you know, just, there's a poetic name for it, where it just means more forest kind of environment and things like that. So that would be the, you know, the natural usage of the word Gokula, like that.
Ethnic side like that?
No, not ethnic. I can't remember. It's a nice word. It just means that kind of, you know, beautiful forest, natural kind of environment.
Foliage?
No, it's. It's one of those. It's like sitting there, but you can't see it. You know,
but it comes later.
You know, you can only feel it. You know, still a nod.
Yeah.
You know, so it hasn't come out of. Usage prevails over etymological meaning. Thus, it refers to Krishna's place rather than any cowherd village. Right. So then in here, then even though it means cowherd village, but it means it's Krishna's place. Right, so that's the usage, is that. So they're meaning Krishna's place, you know, the village of Vrindavan, that kind of aspect. This abode, Dhamma, of Krishna, taught at the center, is the palace suitable for living with Nanda and Yashoda. Its sarup is described. It is eternally manifest, Sambhavam, from the Amsha of Baladev called Ananta. There's another meaning. It is the place where Baladev, whose Amsha is Ananta, lives, Sampavam. Because Baladev is just taking part also. He's also acting as Mukdatta. Right? Though he's aware to make arrangements for Krishna, but he does that as his expansion, his Sampasesha. That then the whole place and everything is expanded. Does that make sense? So he and then Krishna then just take part in the nice pastime. No.
Yeah, I guess I mixed up the terminology. Mukdatta would be in this.
Mukdatta means you have sarvagya, means he's fully aware, and mukdatta means he's not. He just leaves it up to yogamaya how things unfold. Because as sarvagya, he knows everything, so he knows who's doing what and everything's like that. So he puts himself under his yogamaya so that she knows his desire. And then she arranges it, and then how he arranges it. You know, it'd be like that relationship between someone who is refined at eating and someone who's refined at cooking, and they know each other and they interact. And so, you know, you may have so many times, you know, like, what do you want to eat? You know, and then you may have the element that, you know, he'll say, I want this, but then there's also the aspect, a flavor, where he says, you just, whatever you like, you know, surprise me, you know, that kind of thing. So, So it's just that aspect that, oh, he doesn't know, because if you know he's cooking this, you know it's going to be good. So when it comes, it's, you know, it looks right, it tastes, it smells right, it tastes nice. But it's also, if you don't know, then it has another flavor.
Yeah.
So mukdata, because otherwise that's discussed in the place, I think Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur discusses that. When that devotees might be worried, well, if he's mukdata, he won't hear our prayers. You know, because he's only absorbed in the pastimes, but it doesn't mean that the sarvagya aspect isn't there.
Yeah.
It's just that. So that's the thing. He can be both at once, but for the pastimes he's in, he's muktata. For us in our prayers, then he's sarvagya.
Yeah.
Two verses describe the main pitta among many pittas. That of the 18th syllable Maha, the Maha Mantra, served by all mantras. It is commonly represented by a yantra in order to worship it, Maha Yantram. Because to worship you need a yantra and all that. Otherwise, how do you worship such a place? But if I put drawing the yantra, then you have.
Maharaj.
So previously we mentioned that he is the word of mantra and she is the word of the yantra. So this refers to Radha Krishna, is that correct?
Yeah.
Or the deity.
Yeah. Because they're performing the pastimes, but you also have the formal, because as you mentioned here, the pitta. So when you have the yog pit, then it's a formal arrangement. Because in a pastime, everyone's moving around and doing everything according to the pastime. But in the yog pit, then they're going to be stationed in very specific places, because the yog pit then represents, you know, the all the energies and all the expansions and all that, so they have to go in their place. So then Radha and Krishna will be sitting, you know, and then, you know, to the east that'll be Lalita, and then it'll go around like that. I think Vishakha's in the northeast.
Yeah.
You know, so like that, and it goes around, and then who's where and all that, and then from that you can understand the Shaktis that they're, that becomes all those particular deities. So for the pastime they have, like you know, like Tungavidya, she knows all the shastras, like that. So in the pastime, when there's something comes up about shastra, then she's the one that will mention the quotes and all that. So you see that there's times, and, you know, so someone's expert in this, someone's in that, so then they'll say, you know, somebody says.
Yeah.
So it's used. It's just all the various aspects, but it has its point where it's used here and there, and since it's the origin of it, so much comes out of that. You know, it's like each one, it's unlimited. Like you take music, it's unlimited. You take astrology, it's unlimited. You know, you take any of these things, it's unlimited. So then all that comes out, so just with these, this group and their assistance, so then you get these unlimited pastimes. What will come out where, what combinations, at what degree, at what time. That's all just the that's how it can be. Something's not done twice.
Yeah.
But there's a general concept. But that content, Krishna is unlimited, what expands from is unlimited. So.
Yeah.
The contents of the yantra are described. It has six sides. In its center is the bija, shining like a central pillar made of diamond. That's how diamonds have become so popular.
But this is also, when you look inside, that's the top of the diamond, that's how it's shaped.
Yeah.
Because this is where the light comes. From the sides, the rainbow comes. But from the middle part, the white light comes. This is why it's so attractive, actually.
The use of the six sides is explained. The six divisions, satanga, are the places of the six parts, shadpari, of the 18 syllable mantra. Prakriti refers to the sarup of the mantra. Krishna, since, because remember, sarup means the whole, you have the aspects of the qualities, the form, the qualities, the activities, the interactions, the relationships, all that's considered sarup.
Mm-hmm.
That's why then, when we see the misers within the devotional process. Yeah, that's right.
Kripa?
Yeah, but those that means otherwise known as sahajiyas. Is that Sarup for them simply means the form. They call that Sarup, but that's not the meaning of Sarup. They just take it means the body. But Sarup means that form is there because of qualities. You know, Brahma Samhita explains that. A certain mood of the devotee, a certain rati, therefore the form. So if you don't have that form, how is it having this body and then using the body will develop? You know, that would be like saying, I go into the kitchen, and because I hang out with the pots and pans, you know, and, you know, pick them up and put them back and move the spoons around and, you know, do stuff, put up a cutting board, put it back. If I do that long enough, I'll become an expert cook. No? So that's the thing, but where are the qualities are the basis of where that comes from. Form is there, but the form matches the qualities. The qualities create a result. So the central feature will be those qualities. That's why Govinda is the central deity. And that you're attracted, therefore, Madan Mohan, but then pastimes are performed. But these performances of the path create the taste, you know, of Gopinath. So Govinda is the center. That's right, even though So Sanatana Goswami, you can say, is the senior, but it's actually the central is Govinda. You know, just like Advaita Acharya is the senior. Like that. And then Baladeva, then Lord Chaitanya. So it goes. That makes sense. So depending if you're looking at from the Lord's desire, then you put it up in the Prayojana aspect, and then it'll come down. But otherwise, if you're going for the pastimes, you know, the rolling aspect, then it's going to be Govinda. So you're attracted, so you go to Govinda. When you're with Govinda, you get the taste. No? So here, so that sarupa, the mantra means it has all the aspects to it. So when they're talking about, so it's not actually sarupa, and even if it is, what can you do with it? Because if you don't have the qualities of being exclusively focused on Krishna, you can't use them. So sarupa siddhi only comes when there's exclusivity. When it's only about Krishna and nothing else. So their whole projection that, you know, we think about it and meditate on this, the Astakaliya pastimes with our sarup and this and that. So the guru tells you, you know, then you have sarup siddhi and all that. That's what we mean by it's cheap. It's just said, you know, and you just take it and now I'm thinking and this and that. How much do they absorb? Because the gopis in their spiritual form, when Krishna played the flute, they couldn't go. They were not at the point of sarup siddhi. Those that went, that's sarup siddhi. Because now the sarup can be used. It has its perfection. It's all together being used in Krishna's service. Because we take it just, you have a body, you can do stuff. But why do we have this body? It's because of our mentality. We don't look at that so much. We look at, I have a body, I can do stuff. Someone else has a body, okay, I want to be with that body. You know, so we're looking at it from our external point, and so it makes sense to other people on the material with material intelligence. But on the spiritual platform, it's not real. You understand?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So it's not curiosity. That's the whole point. It's like, you know, Prabhupada was mentioning yesterday. Well, what if someone has a question just on curiosity? But the point is that, okay, but is it an area where you can actually understand and use the point. So unless it's you can use it, then what's the point of, you won't be able to understand the answer.
It's an interesting phenomenon that we found, that those who ask, you know, all kind of different questions, you know, it's easy for them to ask you, but if you ask them back like this kind of questions, they think you challenge their not existence, but
their
identity.
You challenge
their identity. But you asking me, I'm asking you, isn't it fair? But they some people do actually, but very few. But most everybody getting like really uncomfortable in this
yeah.
and that. So.
No, this is not.
So like you mentioned, they can surf, but they can't.
Yeah, no, they can.
So it's not fair. It's just.
No, it's they're trying to control the situation for their own enjoyment. Though it's in context of Krishna, but we have to remember is that that's a wide range. And because it's in context of Krishna, there's always going to be benefit. But then there's favorable devotional service.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because we take the extreme, like Kamsa and Nat, they're always absorbed in Krishna. And so they get so, they'll be liberated. But then, because the point is there, is that it's in context of Krishna. That's why it's special. But at the same time, is if it's favorable towards Krishna, what do they get? You know, in other words, Kamsa, he gets liberation. The Brajbasis, you know, they're part of Gokul. You know, I mean, it's very, you know, different.
Yeah.
So in there is that because the questions are and the discussions are about Krishna, that's nice. And in their mind, but at the same time, is that underlying is that they want to ask questions what they want, when they want, how they want, and you're going to answer how they want. I've even had that where someone, I answered the question, and everybody else in the room, they asked a particular question that has a specific detail to it. But you talk on the principle of it.
Yeah.
Everyone in the room understands it. This person is not satisfied. Because their thing is I ask the question, I have a right to ask the question, I have a right that you will answer the question the way I, in the context that I want you to answer it.
Yeah.
You know, it's so like he says, you know, so he says, you know, so how do we, you know, use the Astakaliya Lila, you know, pastime, that meditation. Then you talk about qualifying yourself and being up like this and being absorbed and all these kind of things. They don't want that answer. They want mechanically how it's used. I ask the question, I deserve the answer. And they're very, very militant about it.
Yeah.
You know? So it's that's an extreme. For many, it's just curiosity, or they're thinking about it, and they want to, you know, they want to know about it just because it's of interest to them, though it's not necessarily they can use it.
Yeah.
You know, or you do have the aspect of pride because they ask that question, or look at what an advanced question I ask, no one else asks these questions. Yeah, so it's a, you get a. But the point is, the sarup means that full aspect. So the sarup of the mantra, means the full range of what the mantra it represents and does and everything like that. Prakriti refers to the sarup of the mantra, Krishna, right? So Krishna is the sarup of the mantra. Since he is its cause. Right, so Krishna is the sarup. So Krishna's sarup is the sarup of that mantra. So when he's saying that the 18 syllable mantra, then it's represent Krishna. Krishna is the sarup of that. So that means that his whole range of pastimes and everything. So you see, the sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana are all mentioned there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, and its application. That time. In the yantra situated Krishna as the Sarupa of the mantra, as Krishna is the presiding deity of the mantra, Purusha. These culminate in the bliss of prema, Krishna's sarup, and great bliss of various rasas, Krishna as the presiding deity of the mantra. The kama bija, self-manifesting, jyoti rupena, the mantra, manuna, also reside there. Though the bija is included in the mantra itself, it is mentioned separately sometimes to note its special qualities. Because it's part of the 18th syllable. Because for most mantras, that bija is not included. You apply the bija because for the individual, then let's say you have a general mantra. You know, it's like Brahma Gayatri, Om is included.
Right.
Other mantras, it's just Om goes before it. The mantra, you say Om.
Mm-hmm.
But for Brahma Gayatri, it's one of the syllables.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it's like that. Or let's say you have a mantra. So one sampradaya may use one bija syllable, another one a different bija syllable, you know, depending upon, you know, what's your goal. Yeah, goal like that. Yeah. But here is the kam bija is brought out as kam bija to bring out its excellence. But it's actually part of the mantra.
Yeah.
Udriti. Srila Prabhupada elaborates on this aspect in his purport, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 8.138. Quote, in the spiritual realm of Vrindavan, Krishna is the spiritual, ever-fresh Cupid. He is worshipped by the chanting of the Kama Gayatri with the spiritual seed clean. Purport. Vrindavan is described in Brahma Samhita 5.56 in this way. Shriyakanta, Kanta, Parama Purusha Kalpa Tarvo Dhruma Bhumish Chintamani Ganamai Toyam Amritam Kataganam Natyam Gamanamapi Vamsi Priyashaki Chidanandam Jyoti Paramapi Tad Ashvadyamapi Cha Sayatrakshirabhi Sravati Surabhi Vyaschas Sumahan Nimeshar Dakyo Va Vrajatinahi Nad Yatrapi samayaha. Vaje sweta dvipam tamahamiha golokamitiyam vidantaste shanta kshitivirala chara katibaye. The spiritual realm of Vrindavan is always spiritual. The goddess of fortune and the gopis are always present there. They are Krishna's beloveds, and all of them are as spiritual as Krishna. In Vrindavan, Krishna is the Supreme Person and is the husband of all the gopis and the goddesses of fortune. The trees in Vrindavan are wish-fulfilling trees. The land is made of touchstone, and the water is nectar. Words are musical vibrations, and all movements are dancing. The flute is the Lord's constant companion. The planet Goloka, Vrindavan, is self-luminous like the sun and is full of spiritual bliss. The perfection of life lies in tasting that spiritual existence. Therefore, everyone should cultivate its knowledge. In Vrindavan, spiritual cows are always supplying spiritual milk. Not a single moment is wasted there. In other words, there is no past, present, or future. Not a single particle of time is wasted. Within this material universe, the devotees worship that transcendental abode as Goloka Vrindavan. Lord Brahma himself said, let me worship that spiritual land where Krishna is present. This transcendental Vrindavan is not appreciated by those who are not devotees or self-realized souls, because this Vrindavan Dham is all spiritual. The pastimes of the Lord there are also spiritual. None are material. According to a prayer by Srila Narottam Das Thakur, Prarthana 1, Ara kabe nitai chanir karuna koribe Samsara vasana mora kave tuchahave. When will Lord Nityananda have mercy upon me so that I can realize the uselessness of material pleasure? Vishaya chariya kave shuddhahave man kave hama herabha shri vrindavan. When will my mind be cleansed of all material dirt so that I will be able to feel the presence of spiritual Vrindavan? Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hoibe Akuti Kavehama bhujabo se jugala piriti. When will I be attracted to the instructions of the Goswamis so that I will be able to understand what is Radha and Krishna and what is Vrindavan? Got an honorable mention.
From there.
These verses indicate that one first has to be purified of all material desires and all attraction for fruitive activity and speculative knowledge if one wishes to understand Vrindavan. Right, so that's also then would be a reason why we would be very careful about this whole speculative kind of aspect, because if there's an attachment for that speculation, then we won't understand Vrindavan. You know, we'll catch whatever aspects then the Lord wants to reveal in that way, but until that is given up, you won't understand further. The taste, the moods, you know, the relationship, these you won't. It means facts you might know. And then you try to juggle the facts and what facts go with what and everything. But otherwise, then, no. So that's the problem with it. The problem is the speculation is not useful for devotional service. Means that you're connecting it to Krishna. You call it devotional service, but for realizing Vrindavan, then that speculative and fruitive nature is not going to be valuable. So that's why we're strong about it. You know, so we're discussing the last few days about all these quirky questions that people ask. The reason that they're not appreciated is because of they're not useful for attaining braj. It's not that the question itself doesn't have a value, but the point is it has to be in the context that it's free from karma and jnana. You're trying to gain something from the whole process, or you're trying to speculate on the process.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking that, only Srila Prabhupada had to deal with, you know, this kind of funny questions. And then I saw you dealing with it, you know, in an open forum. And then I have to deal with it. So it seems like, it seems like every Sangha, if it's an open forum,
yeah,
you know, this kind of people are there.
Yeah.
And some, they go to the extreme. I mean, it's not often, but it does happen. They try to steal your audience. They try to, you know, to bring all the attention to themselves.
Yeah.
It's really strange.
Well, you've noticed that either knowingly or unknowingly, they may be doing that when there's a 5-minute question. You know, because
yeah,
they have to give all this and that and all this and whatever you're talking about, then they have to talk about, you know, what they did and what they like this and that, and so therefore I was doing all that, tell this whole pastime, and when I was there, then I noticed this, and so that's their question. They could have just said that, you know, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But that's one thing. So you always know. So whenever they start those, you can just sit back and change up until they finish.
Oh, okay.
Like that. But generally they'll say the question, but then you also have the community question, where they can't actually ask the question. They simply have an idea and they start talking, and you know, it's kind of open, and others kind of have to kind of help and throw in their two senses of this. No, it's like that. Oh, maybe you mean this and that.
Yeah,
it goes this whole thing where it takes, you know, so many people to get the question asked.
Yeah.
But I think that is, they're becoming a center of attention, but it's indirect. They're not doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
They just kind of have that need of attention and they want to be involved but don't know how to, like that. Yeah. No, it goes on. So when you have question and answers like that, and that's just an open forum like that, then it doesn't really matter, because any question can be of interest. It's just that they're asking it out of a specific interest. It's not that everybody else hasn't heard and also doesn't want to know. It's just most everybody else won't ask the question because it's not necessarily appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember we had one devotee here. I think there was no filter between what they thought and what they said. But they were never malicious. That was the thing. They were never envious or jealous or like that. But it's not that the emotions of that they're upset don't come out. You know, if you're sitting in the class and ask, you know, okay, any questions, raise your hand. If you're saying that, you know, we're supposed to be forgiving and all that, and that, why did this devotee yesterday say this to me, and I was trying to, and they didn't. So they're just bringing it up as, you know, this happened and all that, you know. No one else would do that.
It's a definition of a fool.
Hmm?
It's a definition of a fool. There is no...
Fool or kid.
Yeah, like that. They're like that. But, you know, they were well known in the community like that. So no one really minded. You know, they also just, you know, okay, it's embarrassing, but you don't think bad because everyone knows that's just the way they are. Yeah, so then, but you'll answer the, most of the time in these far out questions, you'll answer the question, everybody else in the room will get the answer and get the benefit of how to use it. But the person who asks it will not. They can't understand it, they don't think, they even think you didn't answer the question, you avoided their question,
yes,
and that. Because they're either asking something that is not worth answering, and so you're answering what aspect of it is worthwhile, or they're using the wrong words. So those words maybe mean something to them, but not to anybody else. And so what they're asking is different than what they're saying. But it doesn't matter if it's a discussion about Krishna, it's always a value. So as long as the audience, general audience understood, then that's as good as it gets. But if you try to make them understand, everybody else is going to get bored, because you can't.
Yeah.
You can't get them to understand. You know, it's a matter of they perform Krishna devotional service, the heart gets purified, these things are revealed, and they'll know. So if you say it, they understand it, then that's the point. I think it was Hare Krishna as we're saying about, you know, the thing on the any discussions on the jiva. He says, you say it, if they understand it, they understand it. If they don't, then they won't. You no use to go on explaining, because if they haven't understood it, they won't.
Yeah.
They just need to do more service, the heart gets purified, then next time if something's said, then they'll understand it. But otherwise, at the time, if they didn't catch it, then it's not just almost or some word thing or got this, but not this part. We're not talking about, they just don't understand at all what you're saying. They just keep going right back to the beginning. So then you just move on.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, because I'm facing this problem right now. And then, you know, what is the lesson that I have to learn from this?
Oh,
because,
okay. Yeah. No,
because
that's
also you mentioned, you know, some years ago that, you know, when this kind of situation happens, that other students either bored or, you know, not interested or just irritated, and they stop coming actually to the summit because of this kind of guys.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's one or two max, it's not like many,
mm-hmm.
but still because of the show,
mm-hmm.
you know, then others, you know, with time, they think, why would I go then? It's like...
Yeah, but if you don't address it, then with time those people disappear also.
Yeah.
Like you see, we'd have people who would come and do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just address it in a general thing for everybody. And they don't get all the energy that they expect. That they ask that, and you go, that's a cool question. You know, you're doing all the thing, all like that. But you don't do that. And so then they lose interest. You know, or the one that annoys everybody, then at some point they pick them up and stick them in the corner. You know, and somebody sits next to them when they go to open the mouth, nope. They have a guard, you know.
Yeah, you keep the sign up.
Silence. But the thing that means to learn, because these things are going to be there. It's just part of the scene. But you know, you could say an aspect to learn is that we're, it means this process of hearing and chanting, it's not our process. You know, the names, the knowledge, everything like that is Krishna. And it's given to us by the acharyas. And so for us, we're just repeating what we've heard with our understanding of what we've heard. We try to explain it to the best of our ability. So then it's a matter of its service. It's not a matter of I'm right, I establish what's right. Someone asks a wrong question, I have to establish what's right. It's not a matter of that. There's no sense of justice or something of the things of etiquette in that. Unless it's necessary that they're behaving badly and disturbing you, I have to say something. But it's a matter of being able to answer, keeping the focus on Krishna. Because otherwise, you see a lot of times when they're dealing, the tendency is to, you're talking in something, you know, about the spiritual, so it has that spiritual effect. But for some, they're purified by being in that, and there's an attraction at some point, you know, aspect to that, you know, in their progress. But at the same time, there's still an attraction to all the secondary aspects, and especially if it has any political or, you know, yeah, social kind of elements to it. And that, you know, you talk about leadership be like this and all that. So that's all they have to do. That's what leadership is. But then, you know, the president, he's acting like this. So how is that in line with this? It may not be in line, or maybe, but it's not. This is not the forum. That's between the president and his superiors. But they want justice now. They're trying to get at the president. They can't because they don't have the, you know, the adhikar or anything like that, but they can be able to use the medium of the class for that.
Yeah.
You know, for that, to try to get done and establish what they think is right and how the society. So they'll bring it from wherever it is, the transcendental, just because you said the word, you said leadership. You know, like I said, what is it? I think it's that. Janani Vasa Devaki Janmavado, that verse.
Yeah.
I think in there it's one of them says he's the leader of all the
Yeah.
So then they'll take just the leadership and then take it into the president, even though it's not to do with the conversation. You know. So then in there it's just what we try to find is, well, what is the actual question? Take off all the secondary things and the attachments and everything like that. What's the actual? Then speak on that, and then that can be presented in a way that is not that doesn't have these elements, these negative elements. In other words, you try to bring out the positive aspect of devotional service, and even if you're dealing with a negative, that the negative, the problem of it is how it doesn't support the positive. Right? It means that if we're dealing, you know, like to say what we were saying before, the problem with Sahaji is that they're taking the process cheaply, so they don't actually understand what's really important. You know, that surrender and that actually understanding your relationship and all that. They take it and know just what I feel at the moment, I feel good, and that's what you're trying for. But then what you're getting is like Dhruvamara said, like, you know, broken pieces of glass when you're offered the jewel. So that's why it's not useful. You know, there's nothing. It means it defined as itself, it doesn't have anything useful for us, because whatever is useful is already being presented by the bona fide acharyas, and they've simply taken that and used it to get their own purpose from it. So they're taking something proper and then distorting it to get what they want from it. You know, it's just like the yajnas and all that are proper. And the mantras and the rituals, everything is proper. But then those individuals were taking it, distorting it, so that they're killing animals and they can eat meat. And so Buddha comes to stop all that. It's not that they're doing everything proper at the proper times, and when if something comes up, then that's there. But it's not that's not their purpose. Their purpose is these are regulated things that are there for someone with this kind of desire, so they're following that as the process. It doesn't have an ulterior motive, even though their motive going to the heavenly planets is still mundane, but they're not distorting it. You know, they're just working within that overall, they're working piously within the overall ignorance.
Yeah.
You know. So in that way it can be progressive, because then they are open when a devotee comes along and explains the devotional process, like to Maharaj Prachina Bhargishat. He's just a karmi, his Brahmins are karmis, he's going in that way, but when he meets Narad, because of the respect for authority, respect for the Brahmins, respect for the Shastra, respect for the sages, you know, and having an understanding of the Shastra. Then when he hears from Narada, then coming in contact with the Bhakti Shakti, then he takes up that side. So he wasn't trying to establish his karma as the right thing. He was just, in his progression, that's how far he had gotten. So when he meets something more, he goes farther. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
So you're showing the positive on what's there, and the negative means it's negative because it doesn't bring out the positive. Forgetting Krishna means you're not remembering. So you're seeing, never forget Krishna in the context of always remember. Always remember, it'll be the main thing. Again, it's the primary. You can speak on it on its own. Now and again, you may point out things so you don't forget, but the main is on thee. The main discussion is on the primary with some reference to secondary.
Yeah.
Now, let's say the point is on the secondary aspect, but you're discussing it mechanically in the context of the primary.
Yeah.
Because if you just get into the secondary in that, it gets a life of its own, and then it gets so emotional and this and that, and some get a big taste in that, you know. And so, you know, because you come from the material world, that's all you talk about. So at some point you have to switch out of that, because otherwise then it doesn't necessarily aspire people to practice devotional service as much as to not do what's wrong. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that when you're practicing for the sadhakas, then there's kind of two moods of practice. One is I follow the rules. One is I don't break the rules. Right? So someone's very careful not to break rules, that way they're always following. Someone else, they're always following the rules, therefore they don't break them. In a sense. So the point is it's such a perfect process that even one is on that platform of looking at the negative, you can look at the negative so that it's not done, so that you're always engaged in positive. Though the focus is on the avoiding the negative, so you're thinking about the negative, but it's in the context of the positive. So you get the benefit. While someone else is just focused on doing what's right, that for they naturally avoid the negative.
Yeah.
And so with time, one will come from that platform up to this. Does that make sense? Then you're following it. Why? Because it pleases Krishna. Then it starts to be about Krishna. And then when that becomes exclusive, then prema. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that whole thing of, you know, being right or being the authority, or you have to establish your authority, that's not so important. You can just be establishing authority. The acharyas, the scriptures. That, if they make a comment about them, then you can, you know, be very, very strong. That's not a problem. But on your own, then that's, you know, like that. But at the same time, as you don't let them take advantage. You don't be humble to the poor in such a way that they can take advantage of that and therefore take over the class and, you know, and make their own points.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not, even though you can say it's, oh, but I'm just being humble, but the process of sitting in a classroom situation and discussing, then the etiquette is the person sitting on the seat is dealt with in a particular way. That's just how the process will work. Is if you don't, you won't gain. They may say that, yes, logically they've established their point, but they devotionally will not get any benefit from that. And neither will anyone in the room hearing it. Yeah. You know, in fact, depending upon how it's done, it could even be that everyone in the room gets contaminated. So...
Yeah,
so it's just looking at that, trying to bring out the positive side rather than, you know, it's like people aren't following Varnashram. The point is that Varnashram then establishes human life you can regulate, from regulating, you know, then you can start, you know, apply yourself to the uplifting things. That's the point of it. It's a secondary thing. But if we make it too prominent, then we argue over how this and that, and everyone's a nonsense, no one follows, and this and that, it won't... No one gets inspired to follow Varnashram from that. People who, let's say, have the same kind of mood that, yes, Varnashram is important, then they may be inspired. But they're only inspired because Varnashram is being mentioned. It doesn't necessarily mean that they will be inspired themselves more to follow it better. And the others, then, you know, it's just, you know, it's just like, let's say, I don't know about now if it happens, but it used to be very popular in the, you know, 70s, 80s, that when, you know, you're going through the Bhagavatam class, and then you get to those verses about how, you know, the dark well of household life and that, and then, you know, then that's just taken to, you know, just harass everybody about that and how, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And just as one of those, I've seen it, that verse comes up, you know, and either they know the Sanskrit or then when they start reading the English, then the guy goes, oh no, not this one. Because they know that, you know, what's going to happen. You know, if it's a grihastha, then they might do, but if it was a brahmachari, it's like, okay, here we go again. You know? So that's not so useful or inspiring. And maybe amongst, okay, if it's just brahmacharis and that, but the point is that's not enough unless you have the positive, because the soul requires taste. That's ananda. Without taste, you don't do something. So if there's not a taste for the positive, it means maybe there's a taste for that. That's negative, so I give that up, but that's motive passion. You know what I'm saying? So if someone's maintaining that I'm doing the right thing because that's wrong, and so therefore it's given up, that still has a touch of passion to it, because renunciation of motive passion is giving something up because it's a problem. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, grihastha life, so much trouble, so much this and that, so many things and that, you know, just a brahmachari, so then that's motive passion. Mm-hmm. So that means they haven't situated themselves in goodness, so it'll be harder to practice.
Yeah.
So they see the positive things. It's simple. It means you have a time in your life where you can just focus on your studies, so there's no other distractions. So that's the advantage of it. And so then you can very nicely go ahead like that. And so that's why then you don't worry about, you know, organizations and facilities and management. Someone else is doing that. You just do what you're told. Because you don't have to think about it. Like the president, how much does he have to think about all the organization? Well, the brahmachari doesn't have to think about it. He doesn't even have to worry about that there'll be, you know, breakfast. You know, you just 9 o'clock, you go there, it's there. You know, what's for breakfast? You don't worry about it. It means you could be involved in hearing, chanting, serving, everything. That's the advantage. And then you do that for some time, then you know, you have the knowledge, you have the understanding, you have the practical application. So then, being situated like that, then you can clearly see is, okay, I'm comfortable with this and I have no need of anything else, so I remain a brahmachari. Or, I'm comfortable with this and all that, now I see how to use this properly in grihastha life, so then they could be a grihastha. So,
yeah.
But otherwise, all this grumbling beforehand, if that's all that's keeping you from, you know, how you say, pulling out your hair and then running around on the roof yelling and screaming or something, then it's nice, but it's not really sustainable, right? Because the point is you're supposed to practice until the point that you understand between the two. In other words, when you come to the juncture, you know, the fork in the road, because now he just joined the temple. It's not a question, no one's telling him to get married. You know, it's a matter, he goes, and when he becomes mature, that he could be married, now you've got to the point, is that the path, or do you want to stay through this? And then it's... That makes sense?
Yeah.
And so you say like that, it's in general audience, and so then for those, generally for those who are, you know, have the nature of Naisthika Brahmacharis, they'll be cool with that. Grihasthas will be cool with that. The ones who will get married will be cool with that. But the ones who are the tough, you know, and rough and ready brahmacharis, they won't think it's a brahmachari class. But come back in a few years, give the same class, then as grihasthas, then they will appreciate the value of it. Yeah. Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. These verses indicate that one first has to be purified of all material desires and all attraction for fruitive activity and speculative knowledge if one wishes to understand Vrindavan. That's why then we're not interested. You know, say, oh, I'm just being practical Prabhu. That's great. But unless you're doing that as a sense of duty, in other words, as a grihastha, therefore then you have to take care of the facilities. And that's so that you can be engaged in service and the family can be engaged. Then you're not, it's not fruit of activity. Maybe just saying, we're talking about how to see it in that light, and just, oh, well, I'm just practical, that's all theory. Then we're attached to kind of the fruit of element. Then the problem comes is then it will, that will restrict your understanding of Vrindavan. So to that degree that these are given up and surrendered to Krishna, to that degree they're appreciated. So, you know, so we were talking before, so, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakura is mentioning that the process of Shraddha to Prema, showing how as you remove the anartas, that's how you're moving up. So just like faith is increasing, you're moving up. You know, so also your appreciation of Vaishnavas, it's moving up. So if you see someone's advancing and at some point they don't have anything good to say about anybody, they won't advance more. Because that's not doing. Or someone's following very nicely all the rules and regulations, then at some point just says, oh, we are not fanatic, then they won't move forward. So each one is building as you go. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know. And you can see the higher ones, to some degree, a glimmer is there. Some more taste is there. Some more attachment is there. Some more stability is there. So they're all dealing. In reference to the words aprakrita, navina madana, aprakrita refers to that which is the very opposite of the material conception. The Mayavadis consider this to be zero or impersonal, but this is not the case. Everything in the material world is dull, but in the spiritual world, everything is alive. Right? So it's illogical to say. It means you could say that it's a very rudimentary thing. Is that something's bad? So getting rid of it, that will be the solution. No, something's bad, it is in its proper condition. So let's say some food, it wasn't cooked properly. So the solution's not fasting. The solution is properly cooked food. So we see that about everything. Someone's doing something wrong, the solution's not get rid of him and get rid of that activity. It's not find the right person to do the job. So there's no example of anything where it's just nothing. We may say, oh, nothing's better than, you know, I say, well, you have an empty barn is better than a barn full of bad cows. That may be, but an empty barn is not as good as a barn full of good cows. You know?
Yeah.
So because the soul can't relate to disturbances, therefore they look to getting rid of the disturbances, and that's how you come up with the impersonal philosophy. So it's just a basically, you could say, a knee jerk reaction to problems.
Yeah.
Like that. But it's not actually mature like that. Desire for enjoyment is present both in Krishna and his parts and parcels, the living entities. In the spiritual world, such desires are also spiritual. No one should mistakenly consider such desires to be material. In the material world, if one is sexually inclined and enjoys sex life, he enjoys something temporary. His enjoyment vanishes after a few minutes. However, in the spiritual world, the same enjoyment may be there, but it never vanishes. It is continuously enjoyed. In the spiritual world, such sex pleasure appears to the enjoyer to be more and more relishable with each new feature. In the material world, however, sex enjoyment becomes distasteful after a few minutes only and is never permanent. Because Krishna appears very much sexually inclined, he is called the new Cupid in the spiritual world. There is no material inebriety in such desire, however. Right? So, Prabhupada's going for that principle that's there. And if you catch it, that it's connected with him, and so therefore there's no problem. It's eternal. Here, the problem is everything's temporary. That's the difficulty with these things. And that the only way something can be eternal is if it's in context of the eternal. Right? So engaging the senses in connection with Krishna, that's the only eternal position. So that's the only way it will work. This idea is the senses used here create problems, so therefore get rid of engaging the senses. But then that denies your existence, which is exactly what the Mayavad and the Buddhism is doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's all. So it's not very developed. It's just a reaction to... It's mode of ignorance. Right? So Mayavad will be a good amount of ignorance. Buddhism will be a lot of ignorance. It's very much about it, kind of more destructive than everything like that. So that makes sense. So we don't get distracted by the detail. There's a principle that's there.
Yeah.
Right? No.
The Srila Prabhupada, because he addresses a certain audience, and during that time, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, that was it. So once devotees, they were trying to get an idea of a spiritual world. So the Srila Prabhupada said, imagine a room full of LSD. That's how intense it is.
Not a drop. A room full. And everyone probably goes, ooh.
Yeah. Frame of reference.
Huh? Yeah, frame of reference is like, okay, I'm on board. Yeah. Yeah, probably in that order also that you mentioned it, right?
Yeah. Because, you know, one follows the other.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that was my problem. I started, it was about the rock and roll.
And then, from the wrong end.
Yeah, I started from the wrong side. That's why I never was successful. Right? Okay. Gayantam trayate yasmat gayatri tvam tata smita. One who chants the Gayatri Mantra is gradually delivered from the material clutches. In other words, that which delivers one from material entanglement is called Gayatri. An explanation of the Gayatri Mantra can be found in the Madhya Lila, chapter 21, text 125. Kama Gayatri Mantram Rupa Haya Krishnera Swarup Sardha Chabisha Akshara Tara hoy. Se akshara chandra hoy, Krishne kare udoy, tri jagat kaila kama maya. The Kama Gayatri is just like a Vedic hymn, but it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. There's no difference between the Kama Gayatri and Krishna. Both are composed of 24 and a half transcendental syllables. See Madhya 21, 125, 29. That'll come up also?
No. No.
Okay, so whatever's there is explained here?
Yeah.
Because then you have an udriti in an udriti in an udriti. The mantra depicted in letters is also Krishna, and the mantra rises just like the moon. Due to this, there is a perverted reflection of desire in human society and among all kinds of living entities. In the mantra, Kleem Kama Devaya Vidmehe Pushpabhanaya Timahi Tanno Nangaf Prachodayat, Krishna is called Kamadeva, Pushpabhana, and Ananga. Kamadeva is Madan Mohan, the deity who establishes a relationship with Krishna. Pushpabhana, he who carries an arrow made of flowers, is Govinda, the personality of Godhead, who accepts our devotional service. And Ananga is Gopi Janavallabha, who satisfies all the gopis and is the ultimate goal of life. This Kama Gayatri, Kleem Kama Devaya Vidmehe Pushpabhanaya Timahi Tanno Anangav Prachodayat, simply does not belong to this material world. When one is advanced in spiritual understanding, he can worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead with his spiritually purified senses and fulfill the desires of the Lord. So one may ask, why is it Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada writes it? Because you see in other literatures and that they don't. And because one is that it's written, so therefore then you'll take it, this is what it is. And so then you'll know, okay, this is how it is. And the other is that with time people may, you know, mess up a few syllables, and when they read it, then they can, you know, refine their chanting.
Oh.
You know, that's also there. Because otherwise they may or may not catch them. And then you, because the other one is, it's one, is it proper, is that you generally don't, you won't be speaking these things. But the point is that because they put something else there, then those who think that what's read here, that's the way it would be, it should be written, take that what's written there is the real thing. Well, how come they write this and we write this, so which one's right? And so, you know, problems have come up due to that, that somebody pushes, no, this one's right, because, you know, we're coming after and they're before us. So therefore, then naturally theirs is more authoritative and creates so much problem.
I don't know.
These are, they say, would be more, they say, you don't see it so much now, because I don't know that anybody, now you just get the books, you know, somebody's translated the Acharya's works.
Yeah.
But before, you had to get the books.
Yeah.
You know, like that. They were only printed there, and so then they would notice and make these things and stuff like that. In other words, people unqualified to go beyond the scope of what they have then would go, and then they would create problems. Okay, well, no, it's good. Yeah, bumped into that one. It's good. Man manab hava man bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evaishasi satyam te pratijani priyosime. Always think of me and become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my dear friend. Bhagavad Gita 18:65. In the Brahma Samhita 5:27-28, it is stated, "Atavenu nidadasya trai murti mayi gatihi puranti pravivesasu mukab jani swayambhuvaha gayatrim gayatas tasmad arigatya sarojaja." Samskritas chari guruna dvijatam agamat tataha traya prabuddho ta vidhir vigyata tatvasagara tushtava vedasarena stotrenanena keshavam. Then Gayatri, mother of the Vedas, having been manifested by the divine sound of Sri Krishna's flute, entered the lotus mouth of Brahma, the self-born, through his eight ear holes. Thus, the lotus-born of Brahma received the Gayatri Mantra, which is sprung from the song of Sri Krishna's flute. In this way, he attained twice-born status, having been initiated by the supreme primal preceptor, Godhead himself. Enlightened by the recollection of that Gayatri, which embodies the three Vedas, Brahma became acquainted with the expanse of the ocean of truth. Then he worshipped Sri Krishna, the essence of all the Vedas, with a hymn. The vibration of Krishna's flute is the origin of the Vedic hymns. Lord Brahma, who was seated on a lotus flower, heard the sound vibration of Krishna's flute, and he was thereby initiated by the Gayatri Mantra. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 8:138, verse and purport. Okay. So the flute is the source of the Vedic hymns. That's okay. Because you also have, I think, breathing Mahavishnu, then that's also the source, but that's for how we get them, but the origin is Krishna's flute. So in Vrindavan, then, hearing the Vedic hymns is the most commonly appreciated, you know, amongst all the classes of rasa, you know, of Krishna, just as in the form of hearing the flute.
Yeah. Yeah, I put this words for that purpose, to establish the relationship between the mantra and the personality himself. Otherwise, it's like mantra is something else rather than it's a manifestation of person and the relationship.
Because when you're working with these other mantras, they're with other deities. You know, they're not Krishna-like with the demigods in that. Then the mantra is not actually technically connected with that individual, that soul, or that, or even their body. It's connected with the potency that they're given by Krishna. So again, it's all Krishna. So in that way, the whole Vedas are Krishna. The abode of Krishna was described. Now the surrounding walls, avarana, are described. Oh, that's interesting. Avarana, those are the walls. So we just think of the rings going out, but they're actually the walls. The pericarp, tut, has stamens, kinjalka, which refers to walls around the central area. Stamens are the walls. Other persons have a share, amshanam, of that place. This means that there are others present there who have similar nature, since the whole area is called Gokula, cowherd village. Sukadeva described the similar nature of the people. Evam kudum kukud minam hatva stuyamanas swajati bihi vivesha goshtam savalo gopinam nayanotsava. Having thus killed the bull demon, Arishta, he who is joy for the gopi's eyes, and who was praised by other cowherds, entered the cowherd village with Balaram, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:36-15. The petals of the lotuses, petals of the lotus are the abodes or groves of Radha and other gopis, Shriyam. There are roads at the divisions of the groves and villages at the ends of the roads, since Gokula refers to the whole lotus and these are its components.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.